In the early 60s, jazz singer Sadama B. Benjamin had to leave her country in order to pursue her musical career. She and her future husband, pianist and composer Abdullah Ibrahim, left South Africa for Europe and then the United States. For the past 10 years, they've lived in New York with their children. Sadama's career has often taken a back seat while she raised her children far from her country. Sadama grew up in Cape Town, listening to the music of Duke Ellington and other jazz and pop performers.
I guess that all these things are really deep inside of me, and it's a matter of when you reflect, you know, what shall you sing about? I mean, these things just pop out. or they come to my mind and I say, hey, I mean, I know I can't do them the same way they were presented in the 1920s or the 1930s. And I just think of new ways to do them, or the musicians say, you know, well, she makes everything sound hip.
If you hear a song in blue, like a flower crying for the dew, that was my heart serenading.
Are black people officially allowed to be professional singers in South Africa?
No,
because I know
no.
that you know actors aren't officially allowed to act professionally.
No, that's, I guess, the tragedy of it all. And there's so much talent there, you know. Well, so much aspiration and so such a deep need to really work.
When you were a teenager, did you think, how the heck am I ever going to make a living singing? Why, you know?
I didn't even think that I was going to be involved, you know, as a professional with the music. I trained to be a school teacher, but I was, you know, involved with the singing in the evenings with the church choirs or the school choirs. It wasn't until I was about 19 that I started working in the local nightclubs, and by that I mean in the white nightclubs in the white areas. And I could do that weekends because during the week I was by then a school teacher. So, and that's where I got my other sort of jazz repertoire together, because we had the local black so-called colored musicians working there, usually a quartet or a trio, and there was always room for a singer. And they taught me a whole lot.
I'm just a little confused because I know you were able to sing in some of the white clubs. So what did the status change for a while?
It did. And it was 1961. I guess it was just after Sharpeville, you know, the massacre, the Sharpeville massacre. Well, everything just tightened up really, really very much at that time. And there was a lot of unrest. And I guess that was part of the measure, was to, you know, to just keep people in their own areas. It's easier for them to know what's going on when they can keep you in one place. And so we would just deny that. No more black musicians in white areas.
Is that one of the reasons you decided to leave South Africa?
Well, it got really bad. I mean, there was just nothing you could do, no work. I mean, how would you survive? And we met a young Swiss journalist. And he said he was going back to Switzerland, and why didn't we think about getting out of South Africa? And he could try to help getting work, you know, in Zurich. Well, getting out was one thing, is trying to get the money together. We really were starving musicians at that point. I'd even given up the teaching job. The more involved you get, the more, I guess, this kind of music, in it requires that you give it, that you, what shall I say, lay your life on the line for it. It really is true. And with the help of some very beautiful friends, we put on some concerts, raised enough money for two airfares, and went straight to Zurich, Switzerland, in 1962.
Did it feel at all like getting out of prison to live in a country outside of, to live outside of South Africa where you didn't have
it
restrictions?
It did, you know. These things take a very long time to impact on you. You can't realize it immediately. Immediately, you just want to go back home because it's so different, and it's such a culture shock. And then there's the language that you have to deal with. When you take another country's language, you automatically have to pick up something of the culture. To me, there's that real danger that you might pick up something you don't really need.
Oh, I see. And you didn't want to do that.
No, I'm real fierce about that.
You want to be a South African even though you can't live there now.
Well, if not a South African, I wanted to be me. And I wanted to realize who I was. Because in South Africa, you're told who you are. You know, and someone asked me, well, if you get told from very little that you're inferior because you're black, do you believe this? And I said, of course you do. Of course you believe it. It's all you hear. And it takes a very long time to de-brainwash yourself and then come to a real good feeling about yourself and say, look, I'm a human being. I'm a person and I can do anything I want to do. You know, I didn't know that till like real late in my life.
Well, you went back to South Africa and your children were born in South Africa, weren't they? Why did you return?
Well, we returned because basically, number one, living in Europe, we were very homesick. And we decided to visit home after 7 years out. And I think we stayed about 3 or 4 months. Because much as we wanted to be there, I mean, things had really worsened. There was no way you could make any kind of political statement. The music scene was much worse than when we were involved and had left. Funds run out and there's no way to survive there and we had to leave again. And best place still to go was Europe because Abdullah always had work there. In 1970, I had my first child.
When, where was that?
Well, we were in Europe, but I went back we couldn't make it to Cape Town. We got as far as Swaziland. So my son was born in Swaziland, and we spent a year and a half there. And while we were there, we ran a little music school. Again, these things just couldn't exist because there were no funds. I mean, you just, in the end, you end up against the wall. It's the same story. And for a while, it was New York, it was Europe, back and forth, back and forth. And while I was in Europe then, I got pregnant with my daughter. By then I was about 40 years old. We were stationed in Vienna. We turned on the television one night and we saw the Soweto riots. I was about 5 months pregnant. I said, I have to go home because now really it's happening, you know. And I went home. But that was a beautiful thing to do. Because although it was terrifying and, you know, just very horrible in all ways, the strength and the determination of the youth, it gets to you. And we, both of us, I just felt, you know, that after Tsidi was born, we would leave, we would alienate ourselves and make a real commitment so that we would be able to make political statements and never be afraid.
So you decided to move, go to New York where you'd be free not only to perform but to speak out about
right. And apartheid. We got to New York 1977 and she was a couple of months old. And we aligned ourselves with the African National Congress of South Africa and offered our services. And we are still with them because it has a really strong and very long history of nonviolence. It's been there all this time as the backbone of everything else. And let's say we're part of a cultural wing.
Sadama B. Benjamin singing Children of Soweto from her composition Liberation Suite. This is Fresh Air.